It's the Truepenny Show with your host, James Truepenny.
Welcome to the Truepenny Show. My name is James Truepenny. This is my show, and today we have two shows to cover. Lots to do, so we need to get talking with our very, very, very special guest, Mr. Marcus Green of Nerd Corp. How are you, sir?
Good. Glad to be back. Talking about two jam-packed shows.
Definitely. We're talking about Impact Wrestling Rebellion from Ontario, Canada, and we're talking the Crockett Cup, NWA, Ring of Honor, New Japan, CMLL working together. What is this tomfoolery? But it was awesome, and that was the that was the Crockett Cup, a rebirth of a show, if you will, not just an old show, but a rebirth of a show. Interesting stuff to talk about on both shows. Some people appeared on both shows. Some people moving back and forth between two companies. All sorts of things going on, Marcus. We haven't talked about Impact for a long time, and we've both been very vocal that we've not liked the product for a long time, too much. And Ring of Honor hasn't been our favourite thing either. Marcus, what are your thoughts currently on... What were your thoughts going into these two shows? Let's start there.
Well, with NWA, I had really not been a view of it at all too much. Obviously, when it first began, it was before my time, and I hadn't taken too much time to thoroughly get a viewing of that history outside of stuff with Flair and just stuff here and there and in between. But yeah, I kind of had been on the outside as it's picked up momentum with the rebirth being led, of course, by Magnus and then Billy Corgan and some others behind the scenes. But I was definitely looking forward to the show just because, obviously, as somebody who has come to love alternatives to the mainstream wrestling I've grown accustomed to in my younger years, I definitely was looking to see if this show could present something that was unique but still nostalgic in a way to its roots. When it came to Impact, of course, I was just looking for the show to live up to the months of build that it's allowed itself, because that company has kind of cut down on its shows. So yeah, and they definitely had a hell of a opening hype video package too. I thought that was very well done. So I was definitely looking forward to both shows.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I was talking to Steph Renshaw, who's our deputy editor at Steel Chair Magazine, and she was a week before she was going and said, "What's going to happen? There's like loads of injuries. No championship matches have been signed. They've been hyping it for months, and no one actually knows what's going to go on." And so she was kind of like pretty worried. But overall, I think the show did okay. There were some, as there's been the way, some head-scratching moments and some things that we are just awful. And we will get to them as we go along. So we're going to start with Rebellion. We're going to start with Impact. It's a long while since we looked at an Impact show. About 2 years. So let's see how we get on. Strap yourselves in. This could be a rough ride. Right, six-way match. A six-way scramble. Ice Austin, Aiden Prince, Eddie Edwards, Jake Christ, Jake Diener, and P.T. Williams. 5 minutes and 17 seconds of people flying everywhere. The spottiest of spot fests on get everybody into the card, break some new people, did a bunch of jobs, perfectly acceptable for it was. Kind of what I'd expect to see on an episode of Impact, though, and not on a pay-per-view, was a bit pointless. What did you think of this, Marcus?
Yeah, it was fine for what it was. I don't think this was originally advertised. They kind of put the stuff together. And it worked, like you said, it worked for what it was. You got the guys like Ace Austin, Aiden Prince in there, some guys who could... who are growing as they continue to be on Impact TV, specifically Ace Austin. Jake Chris is always down for some X Division stuff, and had to get Eddie in there because, he potentially had a storyline going on the show that could have been on this show, but, things kind of fell through on one end of that. So, they continue to
build. We're looking at you. Sorry.
Yeah, we are. They did a good job. Well, like you said, it was a spot fest, but it was a quality spot fest. Nobody messed anything up or botched. That's even worse when it's a messy spot fest. But they continued the thing with the pinfall with Ace Austin beefing with Petey Williams, obviously there in Canada. So that's a thing. But yeah, I appreciate the build with Austin, because I think he is one of those next guys to make a big splash in the X Division.
Yeah, I definitely think so. He looks good. He's had a good presentation on television. I've enjoyed his work so far. they are putting the time into the people who are doing a good job, really, and I think that's fair enough. I mean, Impact's not doing bad things at this level. The basic nuts and bolts of putting a TV program together and getting people over, it's actually doing quite well, and it is fruitful to an extent for certain people. Okay, then, we move on to the next match, a singles match. Scarlett Bordeaux with Falabar defeats Rohit Raju with Garma Singh of the Desi Hit Squad. We've been kind of critical on this show about the way that this angle has been presented, just because it seems dated. The run-up to Scarlett's debut against Disco Inferno, it's like we watch other wrestling promotions, and you know, the fans that watch Impact watch other wrestling promotions, and they know that like intergender wrestling exists, and this shouldn't really be a thing. It should just be. And if that's what Scarlett wants to do, that's what Scarlett wants to do, and you build storylines around it. And the match was entertaining, thoroughly entertaining, but it did seem about 12 years behind the times. But maybe that's just me, Marcus. What did you think?
Yeah, for me, I thought it was fine. I've appreciated the whole thing. I know some people, specifically, you know, some women writers and obviously female fans have grown a little disgruntled with this whole Scarlett Bordeaux thing. But I've appreciated, and I understand that 100%, because you got these women on the show who are athletic and who are no longer, I guess, within that negative perception era that can go, and they want to see them go. But I've appreciated the delayed gratification of it all with Scarlett, because I feel a lot of times we, the wrestling fans, we are very micro in terms of how we want things to go. We're not always appreciative of stuff building up. So I've appreciated that. I mean, and she's proven that she can go in the ring, and like you said, it was a fine match. I think her pair with Bala for Falabar is brilliant. Specifically, if you're not gonna have, you know, I think KM is kind of moved on, so I like that pairing with her and with Ba. And shout out to Ba, he looks like he's trimming down a little bit. But yeah, you know, if they're not gonna do anything significant in terms of the tag teams, which they seem to be growing in the division, anything significant with the Desi Hit Squad, this fine. And you know, I'm always a fan of intergender wrestling done correctly. I thought this was done pretty well. I know a lot of people, you know, are not fans, and that's a rabbit hole for a completely different day. But this was fine for me. And Scarlett, you know, she looks good. She doesn't hold back, and she's only going to continue to get better.
Yeah, I think it worked well. I mean, Scarlett's great. I just wish they just kind of like pushed her from the get-go with someone really, really good rather than the year of build-up. I know what you're saying. We should appreciate some patience a bit more. And I have been, you know, I've been one of those guys saying we need a bit more patience. But equally, it's just like,
yeah,
why if she wasn't any good as a wrestler, why would you hire her for your company? That's my kind of take on it. So yes, I understand where you're coming from, but that's like kind of a different take there.
And I don't think anybody was clamoring to see Disco Inferno of all people if she was going to wrestle somebody. So
yeah, what can we do anyway?
Yeah.
All right, then we move on to the next match. Was here's a six-man tag. Moose and the North. Ethan Page and Josh Alexander defeat Rascals, Dez, Trey, and Vince in 9 minutes and 25 seconds. It was a thoroughly entertaining matchup. Big lads versus small lads. Kind of a classic Goliath and David Tail. Did what it said on the tin. I like all six of these guys. Ethan Page and Josh Alexander, I have a lot of time for. Moose is all right for a Kazuchika Okada impersonator. Rascals, very, very good. Do like them a lot, and I think this worked out well. Not that keen on the Rascals promos. The talking head 420 deal for me kind of like seems a bit immature. Doesn't really hit the numbers I'm looking for. I want something a bit more serious. But other than that, the actual in-ring product for them guys is amazing. Marcus, what are your thoughts on this one?
Yeah, 100% agree with you, man. I love all of these guys in this match. The Rascals are just fun. These guys are just fun. I think I'm more a little bit keen to the 420 stuff. It's kind of hit or miss with me sometimes. Like, I think I got to be in the mood for it.
And I
think when they added Moose, who I think is thoroughly coming to his own, talking to somebody else about it, I think they've done a really good job to keep momentum up with Moose, because I think after Aries left, a former Impact regime would have left somebody like Moose and even Killer Cross in the lurch. And you know, they've done a good job to keep that momentum up with Moose, and I feel like he's really coming to his own as a character. I feel like he's, you know, gotten smoother in the ring. He looks like he's in even better shape. And I think he's really done some fun stuff with the Rascals. And Ethan Page and Josh Alexander together, brilliant. I wasn't even really into All Ego Ethan until he kind of got with Josh, because he kind of felt like he was kind of meandering around on the card on Impact.
Fair, it wasn't his fault. He first got to be Abyss's Chris's I can't remember who's Abyss's brother. Chris.
You're talking about Abyss and Joseph Park.
Joseph Park. He was Joseph Park's cousin or nephew or little brother for a while, and then he kind of like went solo for a bit, and he did some cool stuff as a solo guy, but they never really gave him direction. And then this tag team that he's been in with for years has suddenly come to the fore, and it makes sense because they're one of the best tag teams in North America. Why wouldn't you hire them? And it works. It clicked. It's made a lot of sense for them. The Rascals are very, very good too. You know, Dez has been trying a long while in Impact Wrestling. He's never really found his groove, and it's nice to see him settle down into something that's kind of like a long-term arc, and he's doing it with his mates, so it all works out.
Yeah, really, really good stuff. I got introduced to, you know, Ethan and Alex and Josh Alexander in Impact. You know, to me, together, those guys are brilliant and can really, you know, have a nice go at the tag team titles if they, you know, let them have a shot to go against, I guess, the new champions at this point. So that'll be cool to see.
Yeah, definitely. Right then, next match. And I think actually my favorite match on the card, Taya Valkyrie defeats Jordynne Grace in 8 minutes and 59 seconds, and she was laying it on thick. This was like watching Zack Sabre Jr. wrestle Tomohiro Ishii, but just like stiffer, possibly. There was all sorts of Lucha Libre submission stuff coming from Taya. Jordynne Grace putting this power match together. It was really good. You don't get many psychologically compelling matches as good as this on Impact Wrestling at all. And it was one of the best efforts I saw on this card. Really enjoyed it. The fact that it didn't get any love from the fans of Cage Match is shocking, to be honest with you. What did you think of this one, Marcus?
I really dug this. I'm just glad that we're in a spot where we, you know, an Impact where we got multiple women's storylines going on at the same time, and they're all intriguing. And this has been really good. You know, Taya is champion. I'm so glad she's healed now, her and Johnny. You know, if anybody watched them in Lucha Underground, know that that's the zone they work in best.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
You know, so this is really good with her, and it's been cool to see her evolution from, you know, that I guess that war queen of it all. You know, from when she was doing that slow tread to the ring, and now she's kind of got a little different things, so a little more bounce to her, and obviously she got that classic La Vida Loca aggression with her, and to bounce that off Jordynne Grace, who was just all power, you know, the female Rhino, if you will, just powering through. They've had a good build and stuff, and Jordynne has really earned that shot with matches and stuff. And like you said, just the story they was telling with the, you know, obviously Jordynne has the advantage, but Taya is no slouch either. She got muscle and she used it in this match, and you know, her targeting that arm, which I think it's something you have to do against the Jordynne Grace, and kind of break her down with submissions and stuff like that and wear out till you could kind of hit her with something impactful like she did. I just thought it was a really solid match, probably one of my favorite Taya matches other than some of the stuff she did with Tessa since she's you know, been in Impact. And you know, it's nice. Also, nice to see her get a clean win.
Yeah, you know, definitely.
They could have, you know, me and James know the history of Impact when it's come to, you know, clean wins on these shows. So this is always a big up with that. And you know, the way that they told the story, you know, I don't think Jordynne's done with her.
No.
So, you know, and also coming off of, you know, being just the history of Samoa Joe and where he is now, obviously, it was just nice to see a muscle buster again.
Yeah, it was so cool, wasn't it?
Yeah,
it's I mean, just love these two. I think they're awesome. I think that it just works really, really well, and just solid wrestling. And kind of surprised that Taya took the belt, but then again, you see how many title changes was elsewhere on the card, and you can understand that. So, yeah, okay then. Right then, next match was the Impact X Division title OVE Rules match, Rich Swann versus Sami Callihan, and you'll be surprised. No, I couldn't give two shits about this matchup. Marcus, your thoughts?
I wonder why. I was just trying to search the reasons. Oh, I got it.
Sloppy spot fest. Just horrible. People don't like it. Ugh. Carry on.
Yeah. It was. I mean, I think I appreciated this match. I guess going all the way back to, you know, switching to New Japan for a minute. What we got with that long going classic feud between Hiromu and Kushida. Hiromu pushed Kushida to the point where he had to build himself from the ground up and elevate.
And turn up
the aggression and put himself in a different gear than he ever had been before to finally overcome Hiromu. So, you know, we kind of got that with this whole family dynamic and turning Swann up to a more hardcore level and even more so past Callihan to a point where he, you know, was able to overcome him. So from that point, I appreciated it. And I hope they continue to push the whole thing with the X Division, because I feel like there's been a bit of kind of losing that whole thing of, you know, people chase him for that title because he's kind of been wrapped up in this whole OVE thing.
Yeah.
So kind of move away from that. But it was a match.
I mean, yeah, it was a match. It happened. There was two people there, one of which I can't stand and one of which I really despise. So it's just like, yeah, it's there. But we try and be positive on this show, but it's sometimes you just got to say what you feel. And it's like, I don't like these two wrestlers. And that's it. And I don't think they should have jobs. But there you go. Let's move on to something that was really good. And two wrestlers I actually do really enjoy. And I watched and really, really thoroughly enjoyed. Which was Tessa Blanchard defeating Gail Kim in her comeback match. One time only. It was in Ontario, Canada. As you'd expect a Canadian want to come back in her hometown. 13 minutes. It was exceptional. Gail Kim did not look like she'd lost any ring time at all. It looked like she looked better in this match than she did in the last one. And she was coming up with new stuff. And Tessa Blanchard, they let her off the leash. She could do a bunch of stuff she's not done before. So that was really impressive. But this was outstanding. One of the best women's matches you'll see in North America this year, even including like WWE women. This was fantastic. What did you think of this, Marcus?
Yeah, I mean, it's crazy. You know, you said your favorite match was Ty and Jordan. This was my favorite match of the night.
Yeah.
Like you said, this was brilliant. Era versus era, just the whole, like I said, I think, you know, Impact has really benefited from not having as many pay-per-views as, because I think that title is taken elsewhere, having too many damn shows. But, they really benefited being able to build stuff up and having this whole era versus era, Tessa and Gail, and just that whole thing of Gail being that veteran who's, you know, really just, I mean, she's the pillar in which this division stands upon. And everything, and Tessa's this new, you know, sparky hothead coming in, killing it, but maybe not necessarily doing it in the best of ways, specifically showing respect to the, you know, elders like Gail Kim and stuff. So that, you know, telling that whole story was great. And just Gail, you know, gearing it towards, I didn't come back because I missed the ring. I came back, you know, to show this young buck, you know, her place and, you know, what she needs to, you know, do to really get where she's trying to go in the right manner. So, you know, Gail Kim, again, like Goldust and several other people, like the All-Truths, really just aging backwards.
Yeah,
you know, obviously has to do with genetics, but, you know, she really turned it up. You know, Tessa is already, you know, she already turns up that aggression when she gets in there. So, you know, Gail, you know, met her with that, and it was just a phenomenal match. And just telling those little story elements besides their feud with bringing in Tully, you know, before the match. And then obviously showing Robert Irvine, at ringside, who looked like he was texting somebody of how bad their restaurant was at times. It was thoroughly enjoyable. Like you said, Gail Kim, you know, really turned it up. Tessa got to really do some stuff that she had never done before, specifically that last spot of kind of glancing her with the Magnum and then beautiful transition into a cross-face Cobra Clutch, which is my first time seeing
that.
So that was, that was just brilliant. You know, this match was phenomenal. Like you said, one of the best you're going to see in North America this year. And Tessa is probably my favorite female athlete right now. Obviously, that's saying a lot, specifically on a show with James Trupenny, who is all about who is the best when it comes to women in this sport. But yeah, it's definitely my favorite. So yeah, it was just an all around beautiful moment, and see Gail Kim really go out on a really solid note. That stuff with Maria was its own thing, and they stretched that out about as long as they could. But that wasn't necessarily the way for Gail Kim to truly go out. I thought this was. So
I mean, to be fair, the match with Maria against Gail was the main event of that show, because EC3 versus Bobby Lashley sucked after that, because they'd sucked all the emotion out of the room with Gail Kim's retirement match.
Yeah.
It was bad scheduling on their part. But it wasn't the classic Matt classic you kind of wanted for her to lay out on. The Tessa match was really, really good. I mean, Tully as well. I was wondering where Magnum TA was, because though Tully is Tessa's biological father, Magnum TA spent a lot of time bringing her up because he's her stepfather. And funnily enough, he was at the Crockett Cup.
Yeah.
So I didn't realize that, because this was the same weekend. And obviously Magnum doesn't get around as well as he used to, bless him. So he could either do one or the other. So he went to the Crockett Cup, which is fair enough, because he was at All In. But yeah, I think... this was just what it was. And did we see a face turn from Tessa Blanchard at the end of this match? Has she taken the torch from Gail Kim, do you think?
I definitely think it was a torch passion, but a face turn with Tessa, I don't know. I got to wait and see, because Tessa, it kind of just felt like it really was one of those things where it was like a true respect moment after like a hardened battle.
Yeah, yeah.
Because it kind of also felt like, you know, when she went ringside to Tully, like Tully was like, you did your thing, you showed her what the Blanche was all about, now go in there and show respect to somebody on Gail Kim's level.
Yeah.
It was just a true, heartfelt, beautiful moment. She got, you know, teary-eyed and stuff, because she knew what that meant. You know, that she's not just beating anybody. Gail Kim was probably one of the best, wrestlers to ever do it in the way that she did it. So... it was just a beautiful moment. If they turn her face, we'll see. But Tessa has a heel, is just where it's at. You know, that's a zone. You know,
she has a naturally spiky personality, which is one of the reasons why she works at Impact Wrestling and nowhere else. she works at Shimmer as well, and she does get on better with other people now. But she did for a long while. From the rumors that you hear, and from things that other journalists have said about when they interviewed her, she had a tendency to believe her own stuff. And you know, she's naturally built that up. And I did say, when me and Chelsea watched the Shimmer car from WrestleMania weekend, which Chelsea went to a couple of weeks ago, she's trying to act like cheerlead Melissa with all that poise, and Gail Kim and Mercedes Martinez and all these great women in North American wrestling, she's trying to act like them, but she doesn't have it yet. So that, and she's aware of this, by the way. This is the kind of thing she's trying to project herself like they do, but she can't do it quite right because she hasn't got there yet. Beating Gail Kim is one thing that gets her character to that level.
Yeah,
you know, it's because if you want to be like Mercedes Martinez, or if you want to be like cheerleader Melissa or Gail Kim, these great women who've done so much for the industry in North America, you have to kind of act like that. And it is a bit fake it till you make it with her, but that's kind of where she's coming from, and I enjoy that. But it took me a long while to figure that out.
Yeah.
Right then, next matchup was the Impact Wrestling World Championship. Brian Cage defeats Johnny Impact with Johnny Bravo and Taya Valkyrie, because we couldn't overbook this one enough. 13 minutes and 16 seconds. Brian Cage, after having the kitchen sink thrown at him and managing to injure himself, did win the championship. It has been on the cards. I'll be honest to you, watching Impact every week, I'm sick of these two wrestling with each other. It wasn't so much a celebration for me as just blessed relief that this is over. There you go. Nothing against both guys, but I'm just sick of seeing them. I was just sick of the sight of them. That was me. There you go. But I thought where it was very, very good for what it was. Did the best thing that these two guys could do. Told the story. Probably is not a Matt classic, but it was just kind of telling the story. So there's where I'm at with this. It was perfectly serviceable for what it was. And I think it sets Brian Cage up as the company standard bearer, which they desperately need, having lost so many guys in the last 12 months. If he can stick around and be the company man, it should be good for Impact Wrestling. What's your thoughts on this one, Marcus?
Yeah, similar to you. I was looking forward to this because I was hoping, you know, a trigger would finally be pulled, because, like you said, it was just getting long in the tooth with this whole thing. You know, either you was going to go one way with it or you wasn't, pissed to get off the pot type of thing.
Yeah.
And specifically when you got somebody like Killer Cross just ever so waiting in the shadows at any given time. But yeah, I mean, this match started off, you know, really hot, and then obviously it hit a certain point with a Spanish fly, you know, off the ramp, and it kind of all kind of snowballed downhill from there. I mean, God bless Cage. You know, I can only imagine what his body was going through before that spot, you know, because we saw he had some cupping marks on him.
Yeah.
So I can only imagine what he was going through before that, and then obviously that, his back just wouldn't cooperate, and, you know, you could kind of clearly see Johnny, you know, obviously, you know, being a professional, checking up on him and making sure he was good throughout that whole thing. And like I said, God bless Cage for you know, fighting through all that and doing, you know, what he did do after, you know, post that spot, because, you know, it can't be easy. A lot of people might have called it at that point, but he didn't do it. And like you said, it was, because they overbooked the hell past that, because you know, you got the Landstorm over there who sticks that southpaw super kick every time.
He does.
And John E. Bravo doing his thing and tie of it all. But yeah, you know, like you said, they did what they could. Also, I think this match, two of them had something totally different in mind for this match, but they did what they could. Like professionals, they went with the flow of it, and they got to the end and the desired result. And finally, you know, they pulled the trigger on somebody who, just for the longest time, everybody like, well, you're not a world champion, this, that, and the third, all the potential in the world. Well, now, you know, they've given him the opportunity to do so. Obviously, this might have not been the way you wanted to, you know, it to happen in that way, but, you know, you can't, there's never a good time to go down with an injury or be hurt. So,
no.
You know, like I said, God bless them. You know, they did what they could. But it kind of had a sour note in this match for me for a couple of different reasons. But like you said, if they can keep Cage, and I think they, you know, I think it's mutual on both sides, because I just don't know if he went anywhere else, if that they would have actually pulled a trick on Cage, unfortunately.
No, yeah.
Because a lot of companies, a lot of bookers kind of, you know, get, I guess, romanticized with that whole idea of always the bridesmaid, never the bride mentality.
Yeah,
you see that with,
yeah,
a lot of performers, unfortunately, that we could, you know, name off. But, you know, hopefully Cage is able to, you know, heal up and really put some work in. And like I said, between the time that they have between these big shows, it maybe allow him some time to, you know, get back to the percentage, the way he can defend that title in a real solid way. So,
yeah, I think he's going to be good for the company. I think long term, he's the good investment of all the things that Impact could do. They spent time with him. They've built him up. He didn't just start. He went through the X Division. He did all the things you're supposed to do to be an Impact World Heavyweight Champion. He's like company guy. I think he's in the right place at the right time. And he's been very vocal on Twitter this week that he's very disappointed that he couldn't come into his championship reign firing all cylinders and do big matches like he's supposed to do, which I think he really wants to do. But there you go. It's just the way things are. And Johnny Bravo, where does he go from here? There's plenty of stuff waiting for him to happen. I think it might be a good idea to give him a rest for a little while and come back somewhere down the line. I mean, he does work a lot of work for AAA, so go down there for a couple of weeks, get himself sorted out, let Taya carry the flag as the champion, or maybe we've got an angle where Taya takes over the family and kind of has Johnny has her lapdog for a while. That'd be interesting, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, and then after the match, absolutely nothing happened. Moving on. No, nothing to see here. Nothing at all happened. Moving on, the Impact World Tag Team title was a Full Metal Mayhem match. Latin American Exchange, Ortiz and Santana with Kona defeated Lucha Brothers, Phoenix and Pentagon Jr., the most watched tag team in the world as of this week in 2019, by the way. More people have watched the Lucha Brothers than any other tag team on earth, with the except, well, no, because Young Bucks have been off TV all year, haven't they? So literally, the Lucha Brothers are the most popular tag team in the world right now.
That's not hyperbole, people. That's facts.
That's your living facts. 5 million people watched AAA's big show the other week where they dropped the tag team titles to the Young Bucks, and they are the biggest tag team in the world, arguably the biggest wrestlers on earth this right now.
Yeah, and to be fair, if you've ever seen these guys do anything anywhere together, you get it.
Definitely. If you have not seen a tag team wrestler do his thing, then you have not seen tag team wrestling done the way it should be, if you ain't seen the Lucha Brothers. This was actually fantastic. Again, I was sick of seeing these two teams wrestle. I was kind of hoping it would be over, and I'm glad it is over, because they're off to AEW, so we know that it's definitely, definitely over. Did make this main event fairly predictable. However, the match itself was awesome and did everything that it was supposed to do. Was a spot fest, but it was a spot fest with meaning. It was well planned. It was well organized. It wasn't too stupidly dangerous, because there was already plenty of stupidly dangerous stuff on this particular card already. But yeah, I think this did what it said on the tin. Guys at Cage Match give it 8.52. This was good. I like this match a lot, and I think it kind of wraps up this story nicely, and LAX can move on to somebody else. I'm wondering if it's going to be the North, because I think that would be really, really good. What's your thoughts on this, Marcus?
Yeah, thoroughly enjoyed this. Like you, for me, I wanted this thing to come to an end just for my heart's sake. These matches are just the pure adrenaline from the word go. They've met several times here. But this was a really definitive finish. And I love the story they've been telling, specifically with Conan, because Conan is just... He's Conan. There's no other way to describe him. You kind of have to see him to really get it. I was not a man you could just describe with a list of words. You got to see him in action. But, specifically with this match, because of how things went in the previous bout, I'm so glad this is what ended the night.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, like you said, it was a, these guys go take you on a roller coaster ride every time, but I'm glad this was, they had another match, because I feel like the last one kind of the momentum shifted so hard in the Lucha's direction in that last match that it didn't necessarily feel as even keeled as this one did. Like you said, it was spot fest, but it was spot fest with meaning. These guys are nuts. Like, you thought the match they did with the OG LAX was crazy. This took to another level. Thank God Phoenix is alive. that was like the one time I've ever seen gravity not agree with that guy.
Yeah.
I'm really glad that they, that he was okay. And obviously, I think that the final spot was meant to be like a super sweet street sweeper. But after that Phoenix spot, I'm glad it didn't go that route, because that might have been a tad bit worse. So powerbomb, off a ladder, through some thumbtacks through a table, I think is just the right amount to put somebody, even the Elk of Pentagon, down. So really, really good stuff. Specifically, a little moment after the match where he was like, Conan was like, you need to shake these guys' hand. We need to come together like it's Lucha Brothers in LA. It's like, why they got to be they named before ours? Because I said so. That whole deal. It's just great. And obviously some of the roster empty to give these guys the recognition that they truly deserve, because they literally put themselves through hell. It was beautiful. It was a great ending to this match. It went to the right guys, because obviously, the homeboys, Impact Boys, LAX, and obviously the Lucha Bros are headed elsewhere. They really got the wrestling world in the palm of their hand right now, it feels like.
Yeah, they have.
This was just a great match. It's just great to see the tag match finish the show. I don't think that's happened in Impact for what, a real long time.
I would guess Young Bucks, Generation Me versus Kaz and Daniels, I guess, would be the last time. Was it Kaz and Daniels?
Yes.
A one night only pay per view they did, a very special one. That'd be the last time. But you got some tag teams in the world right now. I mean, you look at Guerrillas of Destiny. You've got Young Bucks. You've got Sonata and Evil. You've got LAX. You've got Suzuki and ZSJ. There's some tag teams worldwide who are really good. This is actually getting to be a golden era for tag teams that we never really thought would ever happen again, because tag team wrestling was quote-unquote dead. But you look around the indie scene, and this tag team tournament we're going to talk about in a minute, there were some charging teams in this particular tournament, and some of them were really old. But let's wrap up Rebellion. What's your thoughts on the show? Are you happy with everything that's gone on there?
I am. I like the a lot of the build to it. Like I said, they had a hell of a hype package before the show, really well done, which I'm glad they're getting back to doing those, because those really mattered in the earlier days of Impact. And I think this is probably their best pay per view since what was that show that they kind of snuck up on everybody? Was that Homecoming?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think this was their best show since that. So, you know, really, really solid stuff. They just need to keep building up on stuff. And like you said, building guys like Ace Austin and others. And, you know, speaking of tag teams, they got some really good tag team stuff going on, too. Like the North, you can split the Rascals up if you need to. You can always pair maybe Swan and the Mac and stuff of that nature and other guys. So they got a good tag team scenario potential going on, too. They also the Deaners. They just, you know, kind of debuted those guys. So a lot of good stuff with that. You could just do the Chris brothers with themselves. You know, you don't even have to do Callahan and the big guy. So, yeah, they got some good stuff. They just got to put it all together. They could do the whole, like, a little mini tournament if they want to for those straps now. So that's really cool. But I think overall it was a really solid show. And they just need to continue to build off momentum. Like, you know, for us, it's just been them building upon simple fundamentals.
Yeah.
As opposed to going big. That's always been the issue. They needed to get back to really making the simple fundamentals work, and then obviously they could build, you know, to those big moments. And I think they've done a real good job and stride at doing that. You know, shout out to, you know, Callis and Scott DeMore and all those guys back there. They putting in some good effort.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I think they do drop some clangers from time to time, and I've been pretty vocal about those clangers lately in my writing and on here, so I can understand where I do think you're right. The nuts and bolts idea of booking, and as this show proves that we're going to talk about now, this is as nuts and bolts pro wrestling as you can possibly get, and it worked really well. So the NWA brought back the Crockett Cup, a legendary tournament from the mid 80s that had some of the best, biggest cards and biggest names in wrestling. Previously won by Dusty Rhodes and Nikita Koloff and the Road Warriors. Whoever won this was going to be shined upon greatly in that particular lineage. They brought it back to North Carolina in Concord. They had all the old school stuff, the presentation of the NWA as it used to be, like when I was a kid and I watched those tapes that I found in car park garage sales and at Emswell Market and on TV that I saw back in the mid-1980s. Everything looked so cool. I loved the presentation. The show was commentated by your one, Ian Riccaboni of Ring of Honor, representing Ring of Honor, Joe Garley, who was representing NWA, as the middleman color commentator would be James E. Cornett. And that was interesting because there was a bunch of people on this show he'd fallen out with down the years.
Naturally.
Of course, there had to be, really. But this worked really, really well. And as a fellow FSM writer, James E. Cornett, and to be fair, so was the person in the main event, Nick Aldis, I have to support this matchup because it was awesome. Anyway, this card, well, I mean, first of all, Marcus, I should say, what is your knowledge of the history of the Crockett Cup? Did it live up with the presentation to what you thought it should look like? Or was how did the old school feel fit with you?
I loved it. Like I said, I didn't necessarily come up in that really golden time when it in the NWA like you did, and you know, just seeing them, you know, bring back those classic vibes on the organization, and just really this overall pure solid wrestling show, telling a really easy, solid and congruent narrative throughout the show, and just, you know, keep reminding you, shout out to Cornette and all those guys. I mean, it's funny because I was just waiting for Cornette to go full Cornette, and he kind of held back. I was waiting for it because he snuck a few jabs in there and stuff like that, but he really did a good job the whole world. I think he was just so happy to be back and, you know, really participate in a high quality show.
My favorite.
It's so. Yeah.
I was going to say, my favorite comment was when Colt Cabana was wrestling and Ian Riccaboni was going, "Come on, Colt." And he's like, "Well, why don't you just get out there and cheer for him?"
Yeah. between that and the shot he took at Vince, he was like, "We're calling it a belt because that's what it is. We know some senior citizens don't like it, but that's just what we're going to call it." Like, I just, but yeah, you know, Cornette was just a great, great addition to the show. I mean, with the tournament, I mean, just looking at those teams, you know, specifically in the opening match. And like I said, just continuing to tell that narrative. And even with the, you know, the marathon and not a sprint of it all, a lot of these guys had to compete like four times a night. And they really made that stand out on commentary. Like, this is just no easy thing to win. Like, the Crockett Cup is prestigious for a reason, because when you win it, you've earned it.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and you know, between the trophy and obviously those tags out of it, it really meant something. Like you said, feel like we're living in a really solid time right now where tag team wrestling is coming back to its proper fold, and this show was just a true highlight of that.
What I do like about this particular way that the NWA running. Obviously, Billy Corgan owns is the president of the NWA. Dave Lagana is head of creative. And they have a mix of talent from which are NWA contracted, and some people who work for Ring of Honor, some people come in from CMLL, they work on indie scenes, certain specific indie NWA affiliated indies like they used to under the Bruce Pritchard system. There's a lot more mix of mixing and matching, and the prestige has come back to the company. They've done much better with their kind of penetration. In fact, to be honest with you, they're a hotter company than Impact Wrestling are right now, and to an extent, nearly hotter than Ring of Honor are right now by doing this mix and match style. And I love the fact that the audience was an old school Southern audience who were into it. They were into everything. They popped for everything. And, you know, you got a card that was main event by two British guys who wrestled a very British style match, but the crowd were into it. We'll talk about that later, so we should talk about the card, though. So, first of all, there was a qualifying battle royal, again, because you have to get everybody on these big shows these days. But Royce Isaacs, Tom Latimer, that would be Bram from your Impact Wrestling, they defeated Cam Carter, LeBron Coizone, Jay Bradley, and Jeff Josephus. I like Jay Bradley a lot. He's a cool guy. He actually talked to him a little bit for some stuff I did for Steel Chair not long ago. Team Tag, Billy Buck and Kevin Blue. The Boys, Brendan and Brent. The Dogs, Rhett Titus and Will Ferreira. And the Dawsons, Dave and Zane Dawson. And a battle royal that was perfectly cool. Nice to see the boys getting some ring time. Now they're getting away from Dalton Castle and they are completely kind of separate. They've got their own thing going on. Royce Isaacs, obviously Bram has his own issues that he brings with him, much the same to some of the stuff that went on Impact Wrestling, but that never stops him being a good wrestler. There you go. What can you do? Can't have everything. He is a close friend of Nick Aldis, so kind of that goes with the territory, I guess. They are. Royce Isaacs worked very, very hard on the US indie scene for a long time. Big term player at Pro Wrestling from Hollywood. And he's a good guy, and this was pretty good just all generally. What did you think of this particular battle royal?
Yeah, I thought it was solid. I liked it. I liked all the teams in it. Admittedly, I was going for the rooting for the boys to pull it out.
Of course.
And they nearly did. But yeah, I think telling that story of look, this is one of those tournaments that could probably benefit long time or more familiar tag teams, and you know, Latimore and Isis was kind of what thrown together on this show, right?
Yeah, that was it. So, well, they were kind of new the week before. If you listen to Art of Wrestling this week, Royce Isaacs goes into a bit more detail. They kind of knew on the Saturday before that they were going through the tournament as the wild card, so they called themselves Team Wild Card. So every time they just walked around going, Wild Card! And that was their thing. Yeah, so they kind of did know that. Yeah.
Yeah, so it was cool to kind of see that, you know, because a lot of times it could be like water and oil, but they mix quite well. So, and then obviously it's easy to do that when you have a united goal. I thought it was really cool for opening bout and setting the stage for everything that was to come.
Yeah, exactly. Right then, first actual proper round match was Bandido and Flip Gordon. I honestly, at the end of this, I cared 3% more about Flip Gordon than I have done before. 3%. It got up there. He's selling properly now, and he doesn't come across as such a dweeb. Anyway. Bandido, I think it was just core up for Bandido. I have to watch a Flip Gordon singles match to see if I care about him anymore. Bandido and Flip Gordon defeated Guerrero Mayo Jr. and Stucker Jr. in, to be fair, what was just a reasonably clumsy opening round match. It was all right, don't get me wrong, but Flip and Stucker Jr. did not have much chemistry at all, and it was more of, I'll go this way, you got the standstill while I hit you. It was all a bit... It was all right.
I did see that. It did get awkward in there for a second. I'm becoming more of a Bandido fan, so it was just fun for me to watch him. I think he looks cool. I think he's, you know, great performer and stuff like that. And you know, like you, I'm kind of in the same ballpark with you on when it comes to, as I like to coin him, Flat Earth Flip.
Flat Earth Flip. There you go.
it was clunky there for a second, but they made it work towards the end.
Yeah, it was fine. It works it hunted. It just kind of got CML guys over for a bit. They had a good run there. Them North Carolina fans didn't really quite know what was going on. Slightly confused by the bright and flashing colours. And then that was it. So yeah, I think they got Bandido more than they got, because they probably heard of Bandido for a start, so that probably helps. Next round match was Royce Isaacs and Tom Latter defeated the War Kings, Crimson, and former NWA Heavyweight Champion Jax Dane. This was actually pretty good. Kind of surprised the War Kings didn't go further along this. These are an established tag team, former tag team champions, former NWA World Tag Team Champions. Had a run in Impact Wrestling, were very good. Obviously, Crimson's an Impact guy. To essentially, the NWA is what Impact Wrestling was 3 years ago, but better, with more money and better production. So, yes. but this was good for what it was, but it wasn't never going to get that far. What did you think of this one, Marcus?
Yeah, I was, you know, we got to this match. I was like, hey, it's, the War Kings, as they were called in Impact Wrestling.
Something not War Kings.
Yes. Survivors of War, something like that. But yeah.
Dogs of War. That was it, wasn't it? Dogs of War.
Dogs of War, Soldiers of War, something like that.
Something like that, yes. Dogs or something. But
even when they was in Impact, which I think they could have got used more effectively, but again, different regime. But I thought, you know, those guys got great chemistry together. They looked apart. They obviously, like you said, they're decorated in and out of the ring. I thought they would have went over here. But again, it was telling a story with Isaacs and Lattimore throughout. And, you know, to their credit, they did what they had to do throughout this tournament to overcome the likes of a Crimson and Dax Dane, who, you know, that's probably the best in terms of just matchup across the board that they had.
Yeah, I think so, definitely. And it just worked well. Thoroughly entertaining, proper old-school Southern tag team match. Now, if you want to talk about Southern old-school tag team wrestling, the guys that wrote the book were in the next match, the Rock and Roll Express, Ricky Morton and Robbie Gibson. They lost to the Briscoes, Jay and Mark, as you kind of expect to do, as they have a combined age of 122. having said that, this was one of the best matches of the weekend. This goes to show when you've got two guys who know exactly what they're doing, who may not be as mobile as they used to be, but know how to sell. And if anyone doesn't know how to do the babyface sell better than Ricky Morton, I want to know who the hell they are. This was everything it needed to be. Classic promos from both teams at the start of the show. Nice to see you, Jay. Nice to see you too, Jim. Now give me that microphone before I kick your ass. we do have problems with the Briscoes as well. It's not like we hate everybody on this show, but, you know, there are some issues there.
These are not unfounded issues.
Bit homophobic. Though we do kind of like them as wrestlers. Well, I do. Not everybody else does. But I do like them as wrestlers. And this was exactly what it was supposed to do. The Rock and Roll Express were not going to go four matches, let's be honest. But they put some rub on the tournament. They gave it some lineage. They gave it some control. They had that story. We went out in the first round twice. We never got our fair shot. 30 years later, we're coming back to make sure we do. They tried their damnedest, and they didn't get there. And it was exactly where it needed to be. I think, anyway, it was never going to be a great wrestling match, but they said what they needed to say. What did you think, Marcus?
Yeah, half the greatness of this match went to the mic work. It was just cool to see, like, Cornette, like he was a kid in a candy store again, or like a kid at a Comic-Con, some of these guys dressing up. It was just great to see that, them guys on the mic, like you said, Ricky Morton and Robert Gibson, just the reception that they got and everything, it just worked. And of course, the Briscoes being the crawling anybody's smile, the ultimate spoilers, if you will, issues aside, you know, those guys are effective in what they have to be, you know, effective for. So they worked, and like you said, didn't expect Rock and Roll to go far, but they showed the Briscoes they're not just to be mowed over. You know, they are who they are for a reason. So that was some solid stuff.
It was just too cool. Just too cool to watch this match up. Jim Cornette. That line from Ricky Morton, how long have you known me, Jim? Have I ever been known to back down? It was like the crowd really lapped all that stuff up. It was just genius. Really was. Next round, Villain Enterprises. Brody King and PCO defeat Satoshi Kojima and Yuji Nagata in the match I was most looking forward to. I have to say, it was pretty damn good as these four behemoths tried to chop each other senseless for 10 minutes. Essentially, that's all it was. There was chops with more chops and some chops on the side. And then some more chops. It was big lads wrestling. Dad fight to end all dad fights. Again, everyone in this match was over 50 except Brody King. Or nearly over 45, put it that way. But it was, again, it was just one of those things. Kojima did all his spots. It was sing along with Kojima, Nagata sing along with Nagata. But they had some back and forth. They told the story they needed to tell. And it was two slobber knocker teams giving it plenty. And that was exactly what I needed at this moment in the tournament. It was a lot more variation, so it was good. I liked it. They did seem kind of like, put the big team lads together, put the small speedy teams together. There was a lot of like for like in this tournament.
Yeah, look, man, get the icy hot for the fans and for the wrestlers at this point. When it comes to this match, I mean, this, like you said, you see a match like this, you kind of just want to hold your areolas. And as opposed to when you're watching a Walter match, you just want to cover your chest in general. but yeah, this was great, man. Like, this was, like you said, the youngest person in this match was Brody King. But he'll go just as hard as those vets. And that's why he passed so well. And I'm continuing, obviously, to get my education in PCO of it all after coming off of that Madison Square Garden show. So I'll just continue to go down a rabbit hole with this guy with my jaw on the floor.
He's something else, isn't he?
Yeah, he really is. And to say he's not of Japanese descent, the shape that he's in and going, you know, almost as hard, almost feels like in a cruiserweight fashion at times, depending on what he feels like doing. It's just amazing to see. So yeah, this was a really real solid match.
It's literally taken 20 years for him to fall back into favor again, to figure out his place in the wrestling world, but we're so glad he has. All right, then, next was the NWA Women's Championship match, which was vacant after Jazz left the company inexplicably for no apparent reason on the Friday. So they had to book this quick, and Allison Kay, AK-47 Allison Kay, defeated Santana Garrett in a match that was pretty damn good. Santana Garrett showing a little bit of, I think, nerves maybe for the big audience. I mean, she's a former NWA Women's Champion. Wasn't quite on the ball for this one, but Allison Kay, Sienna from Impact Wrestling, certainly was. She's your new NWA Women's Heavyweight Champion, and straight on a plane to go to Tokyo Joshi Pro to defend that title. Brilliant. She's just brilliant. I think she's exactly the right person for this particular role in pro wrestling right now. And again, it kind of goes to show that there is much more life after Impact than there is in Impact at times. What do you think of this one, Marcus?
I 100% agree with you. You know, Santana, I guess I kind of always been a little bit indifferent with Santana, but maybe that's because I just like Allison's aggression more. And you know, I feel like she's, you know, obviously Santana is extremely talented, but I think I just kind of geared more towards Allison's swag, if you will, and you really feel like she just owns every part of that character 100%.
Yeah.
It's funny because every time I see her, obviously she, you know, I got knowing and impacted Sienna every time I see her with that lovely Cruella DeVille-esque hair she has going on. I like to think about it. Rosemary calling her the She-Skunk, which is just a little comedy element for me, but she really turned it up in this match. And just, you know, like I said, she got that character down pat, you know, just that little tension between her and, you know, Medusa, who kind of came off very awkward on the mic for some reason before this match.
That promo took a long time, didn't it?
Yeah, I was trying to figure out if it was something wrong with it, if she was trying to read, if she was just taking pauses for no reason.
She was trying to read it off her phone. If a professional wrestler of long standing has to read the promo off your phone, something's going slightly wrong.
Yeah, that kind of just threw me off. Like, I remember I kind of just put it on something else for a second.
Yeah,
because it just got too awkward for me, specifically from somebody like Medusa, who I would think really doesn't have a problem on the mic specifically saying how she feels about anything. So but the match was good. You know, like you said, Sienna is the perfect person for this. You know, she absolutely deserves it, because there was a time not too long ago where I don't know if she thought she was gonna get back in wrestling. You know, with some health issues, but I'm glad she's past that and she's back in form. And I think she's gonna do really great with that title.
Me too. I think so. There's some heavy hitters have held that title down the years. Even recently, Santana Garrett was one of them. She was very, very good. Barbie Hayden's held it recently as well. And of course, it doesn't get much bigger than Jazz, WWE Hall of Famer, one of the best women's wrestlers of the last 20 years. She did an awful lot for women's wrestling in the day. It's a shame that she left the organization so abruptly, but there you go. Right then, move on to the semi-final match. Royce Isaacs and Tom Latimer defeated Bandido and Flip Gordon, kind of slowing some descent into their singles match that they're coming up with on Ring of Honor. This was one of those kind of matches. They were trying to sell a bunch of stories, not just for the NWA, but also for Ring of Honor going down the line. This was really well done. This was, you know, a good kind of... They didn't lose. They kind of lost because of mistakes. So it kind of sets that babyface dissension. They don't want to go heel with anybody. But it goes like, you know, whose fault really was this? And Isaacs and Latimer steal another one, and it was just kind of a really good run. What did you think of this, Marcus?
Yeah, by this time, Isaacs and Latimer was, you know, found their groove and they knew the direction they wanted to go in and knew the spots they needed to be in when they needed to be in them. And, you know, obviously, when you got somebody like Gordon who's extremely talented, but kind of, you know, there's a target on him. You know, when you look coming off of the, you know, I think we had a knee injury.
Yeah, yeah.
So, you know, that's easy. Those things, even when they heal, they never fully do in a way. So it's always a target to go back to that and telling that story, isolating him. And obviously, Bandido won the high tag, but just being at the right place at the right time to kind of cut that off, you know, they literally stole this match. And yeah. I would imagine it was extremely frustrating. But like you said, telling that story, you know, just not away from this and going to the Ring of Honor of it all, of, you know, I guess Bandido and Flip Gordon, you know, heading for a collision course. So that'll be cool to see if Bandido will decide to, you know, take apart that target come that match. So
yeah, it's a story to tell. I think it's when Worlds Collide. I think that's going to be their next big matchup. So we'll see what happens there with them. But it is, you know, it's kind of this multi-layered storytelling where bookers are getting their ideas in on other people's events because they're well put together and well organized. And this is it. This is the way it's got to be on an event like this. If you go back to the first Starrcade, which is really what they were kind of emanating the feel from, there was matches from WCC, the World Wrestling Council in Puerto Rico. There was matches from other organizations on the Crockett card, and everybody got their stuff in to tell their story to a big audience. That's why the reason why they let them have those wrestlers for that card. So yeah, this is kind of what they're doing like back in the old days. And I did say, like, last year when the Hardys and the Young Bucks headlined the Supercard of Honor just before WrestleMania, the day before WrestleMania, and the Hardys dropped the tag titles to the Bucks, those shows felt like the old WCW shows I used to watch in the early 80s. They're getting similar crowds now. They're getting regularly 5,000 people on big shows. They're doing kind of the business that WCW were doing Ring of Honor are. They dropped some right clangers, but they have managed to correct the course on that many times. Yeah, they're doing all right, I think, Ring of Honor at the minute, and the NWA is certainly helping with that. So yeah, I think it's kind of impressive, really.
Yeah, specifically when you, like you said, they got some clangers. Like I still think they owe like a string of fruit baskets, if you will, to New Japan for one specific clanger. But like you said, yeah, besides some fluffs here and there, they you know, doing the right things to stay the course and, you know, keep that momentum, specifically with that exodus that they had. A lot of people were not, you know, expecting them to really fall through a rut, you know, when they lost, I guess, the AEW of it all from their ranks.
Yeah.
But they, you know, they've done a good job to bring in talent and, you know, like the Bandidos and the Rushes of it all and stuff of that nature. So, I you know, I'm looking forward to seeing what they go do come Worlds Collide.
I think the NWA kind of thing really does help out with the Southern kind of appreciation, because these fans were not Ring of Honor fans. They knew who the Ring of Honor guys were, but they popped for the NWA guys more than they popped for the Ring of Honor guys, which was really important. And I think it kind of gives, it takes some pressure off Ring of Honor. They don't have to put money into organizing big events in the South. Let the NWA deal with that, keep our presence down there, save our time for up north. It's back to the old system of small regional territories looking after a specific area, and there's nothing wrong with that. It works. Did for the NWA for 50 years. So, anyway, we'll see. Moving on to the next semi-final match. Villain Enterprises, Brody King and PCO, defeat the Briscoes by disqualifications, because this is the big NWA Ring of Honor feud at right now for as far as tag team wrestlings are concerned. This was the third go-round. We have a rubber match, one each. This was the rubber match. The Villain Enterprises take it this time on a DQ. The Briscoes were not happy afterwards with that DQ decision, but they did blatantly hit somebody in the face with a chair. No. So it was just like, yeah. Yeah, but this was a really good match. It is the money match for Ring of Honor as far as tag team wrestling is concerned at the minute. I'm wondering if this is going to headline a pay-per-view before too long, because this is just too good to pass up time and time again. What do you think of this one, Marcus?
Yeah, it's funny. This is the tag. This wasn't the tag team match that got the most time, which is intriguing. Because I mean, this is like a monster truck rally. you got, you know, them boys versus like a Frankenstein electrified freak machine. They had my PCO of it all just coming to a head. But yeah, I mean, obviously the Villain Enterprise was a little bit more worn out. I don't think the Briscoes put in too much of an exhaust when it came to Rock and Roll Express, and then they coming into this match and really going after what, because they felt like they either went out to PCO,
yeah,
and isolated him, you know, PCO again. They called themselves the Wild Card, Isaac and Lattimore, but PCO in any situation is a wild card. So all over the place, you know, dislocating limbs and stuff like that, and just the guys, just, you never know. You just gotta watch them to really get it. But yeah, again, tell a more story after the match, really just being sore losers.
Yeah,
to the 10th power the Briscoes are, you know, because their whole point was to spoil a lot of guys in this tournament, in general, and then obviously they turn into sour pusses and like F the tournament. So classic Bisco fashion here, but the right guys got over.
Yeah, definitely. They worked really, really well. It tells another story, lays it up for another main event for the Villain Enterprises, another go-around with the Briscoes. Yeah, just can't say enough about these two teams right now. Right then, next matchup was NWA National Championship. Colt Cabana defeats Willie Mack to win the championship in an outstanding professional wrestling match that even Jim Cornette liked. So I have to say, this was a lot of fun, as you'd expect from these two wrestlers, but did what it said on the tin as far as a mid-card championship match, sent the fans home happy. Colt looked genuinely pleased to be back to being an NWA champion. Him and the NWA have had a rough ride down the years. He's a former two-time World Heavyweight Champion. He did not get on with the Bruce... what's his name? The previous president. He did not get on with the previous administration of the NWA, and he kind of came back with Billy Corgan and has tried to do different things with the NWA and has become part of the NWA. Colt doesn't like signing contracts. It's kind of an allergy he has from his WWE days. He always does things on a handshake deal, and this is the kind of thing he can do. He will be a good national champion. He will bring prominence to that championship, and with his presence in the media as outside of pro wrestling as a stand-up comic, he's the kind of guy they need on that championship belt. Willie Mack left the NWA the night after this. Now, there is some consultation. We'll talk about that afterwards. What are your thoughts on this matchup first, though, Marcus?
Yeah, I mean, I had fun with this match. Not the biggest Colt Cabana guy.
I know you're not.
I like his thing, you know, boom, boom, Colt Cabana. But, yeah, I do appreciate when he's put in the situations where, and I think Cornette pointed this out on commentary, you know, he likes Colt Cabana. He just kind of wants him to kind of get away from more that comedic aesthetic and get, you know, turn up that aggression, if you will, because he can go. I mean, this is no small guy.
No.
You know, he can really manhandle somebody if he wants to, but you know, Colt is, you know, he's found that sweet spot of effective comedic arsenal, if you will. And it's fun to watch a guy like that. I'm admittedly a Mac guy, you know, just all around. I just with Impact, but dating all the way back to Lucha Underground, just because Mac is just a guy that, you know, a lot of guys would just, you know, look at and scoff at, and then you see him and then it's like, yep, I was definitely wrong on this cat.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
You know, he's just great in the situation you put him in. It's not too much that Matt can't do. You put him against a guy like Colt, and you know, it just works itself out. So, yeah, like you said, obviously Matt may be involved in some other endeavor. So Colt is a guy, you know, like you said, he may be on a handshake deal, but he is a man of his word. So, you know, that works. So, you know, he's going to be continuing to go all over the world with his title. So.
Yeah. So the scoreboard on Willie Mack is this. He was contracted to the NWA on a handshake deal, much like Colt Cabana. He was not signed anywhere except for Lucha Underground. Lucha Underground have been very tight with their contracts. They're letting certain people out and letting other people not. Mainly, I think, the people they liked, which is the reason why Joey Ryan has been let out of his contract way earlier than anybody else. Other than that, or he had a better lawyer. Don't know. But there's a couple of people. Eva Lise is another person who's complained about the fact she can't work for anybody else the way she wants to because she's kind of tied down to what Lucha Underground tell her what to do. It's tied into the Crash because they have a talent swap arrangement with AAA, and AAA are the ones who own the rights to the contracts for Lucha Underground because they bought them out from the production company from Lucha Underground, or it was part of their payoff deal, which meant that Willie Mack had to go where he was told, and apparently he was told to go to Impact Wrestling. Whether or not that is true, and whether it is by his own free choice, we don't really know. Mac's not talking about it. Nick Aldis was very upset with it because he thought that he would probably eventually sign with the NWA, and the NWA are genuinely upset because they feel they've put a lot of time into making him a big star, which they have, because Impact certainly haven't. He's been a mid-card tag team wrestler. He's been Rich Swann's sidekick for the last 6 months, whereas in the NWA he was the second biggest champion in the company. He's had a lot of international presence and exposure. So yes, I kind of agree with the NWA. They have done a lot of work, but them's the breaks. Unfortunately, that's what happens. Any thoughts on this situation, Marcus?
Yeah, I'm hoping that, you know, with him signing, I guess, a semi-long-term deal with Impact, that they make moves to put him in better positions to be more of a prominent role and figure on Impact TV. Like I said, like you pointed out, he kind of got wrapped up in that Rich Swann OVE-ness of it all.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
Mac is bigger than that, and he can, you know, do far more than that. So hopefully we see that in the upcoming weeks and months of Impact. But I mean, yeah, like you said, it's understandable. And obviously, you know, I think you've seen far more that they've done with him in terms of this new NWA, if you will, this revived NWA, in terms of what they've done to build him and actually make him a champion, which is more than he's been on Impact, like you said, for the time being. So, you know, it's understandable. But like you said, them's the breaks. This is wrestling. Anything can and will happen, unfortunately. Yeah, we'll see. You know, I think it's between looking at this show, I think there'll be a lot of guys anxious to kind of fill the spot that William Mack might have left. So, you know, we'll see. But again, it was a cool match, and you know, just all the best to Colt Cabana and the Mack. Obviously going different ways, but hopefully ways that are best for them.
Yep. And then we get to the final, the NWA World Tag Team Championship Tournament for the Crockett Cup 2019. Your winners, Villain Enterprises, Brody King and PCO. They defeated Royce Isaacs and Tom Latham with Medusa. Yeah, these belts were vacated prior to this. They haven't been, I don't think so, they've been signed since the Corgan takeover of the NWA. They've gone back to the old championship belts from the 1970s. This is the original Briscoe brothers, and Jay Youngblood and Ricky Steamboat, that tag team era of tag team belts. That's the design that they're going with, which I think is real cool because it's the Crockett era design, which is really interesting. Yes, they took Crockett Cup, which was presented by the Crockett family and Joe Koff and Billy Corgan. Royce Isaacs and Tom Latimer had a good run. It was kind of like the classic final. They were the underdog heels who found this magic. Villain Enterprises were the underdog baby faces because they got through all these injuries, and it was a matter of watching which team could manage to survive towards the end, and it was Villain Enterprises. And they're really kind of proving themselves to be one of the great tag teams in the world today. And it works. Just two guys, it works. It's like Jim Cornette said, in any other tag team, Brody King would be the weirdo, but he's the normal one.
Exactly.
Marcus, what do you think of this match? And what do you think of your new NWA tag team champions?
Dug it. Loved it. Obviously, it went against, I mean, you would think coming in this match, that was going to go one way and win another. It went the right way for me. Like I said, anything can and will happen in wrestling, but specifically with PCOs involved. and this was another solid matchup in terms of size and, you know, chaotic potential coming off of that War Kings match that Isaacs and Latimer had. But yeah, I mean, it's just fun to watch King and PCO do their thing. I mean, they really synced up well. Obviously, it kind of feels like, you know, both men do their own thing, but it eventually, you know, comes together for the good. Obviously, you just can't control PCO. But you maybe that's some, you know, like a line out of the Incredible Hulk. Maybe I can't control it, but I can aim it. That's what it feels like. And just that cool spot where he dislocated his arm or shoulder, and Brody King just like yanked it over the ropes and brought things back together, and then PCO got the high tag and finished things out. And it was a really solid, I think, finish to a really good tournament. And like you said, they've slowly but surely emerged as one of the best tag teams we got going right now. So, you know, this is not going to be no easy team to knock off, and I'm looking forward to seeing, you know, they run with these tag straps.
Yeah, it's going to be really interesting. Right then, the main event of the evening for the NWA Heavyweight Championship of the World. Marty Scurll lost to his best friend, Nick Aldis, in an absolutely outstanding match. This match was probably better than the match at All In with Cody, I think. It was a better technical wrestling match. There was more stuff to it. There was more story to it. Tommy Young doing instructions and checking the wrestlers was brilliant. It was just everything I wanted from an NWA Heavyweight Championship match of my youth. Broadcast in full. It was nice to see Hebner there getting his guard job back. It looks like the old Impact Wrestling crew of like 3 or 4 years ago. Especially, like, we forgot to mention Cowboy James Storm came in to challenge Colt Cabana. It's such a good kind of company at the moment. I like what they're doing. It's kind of stuff of wrestling I like, and it's not too promo heavy. The promos are organic. They're letting people do what they want to do. It's a proper wrestling company as far as I can tell, and I enjoy what they're doing. But this heavyweight championship match was outstanding. A lot of old school World of Sports Catch-as-Catch-Can style wrestling, brawling. There was a blade job in the middle of it. Camille, who is Nick Aldis's accomplice at ringside, she got kicked out by Tommy Young to start with. She came back, and Nick Aldis sent her to the back, said, no, this is a sporting contest over the NWA World Heavyweight Championship. This is the way it's meant to be. And the crowd popped for this like nothing else. It was just what they wanted to see. The NWA title in Concord, North Carolina. Can you imagine it, Marcus?
Yeah, I mean, this was really beautifully executed. This is it's definitely better than an All In match for me. This is the match I wanted to see at All In. Match. You know, I got the emotional element that a lot of people connected with, obviously, in that match and what it meant for Cody and just that whole deal overall for what those guys did on that show. But it was too many shenanigans for me in that match. And this, you know, this was just the right amount of everything. You know, like you said, the Catch-as-Catch-Can style, the thing from the opening bell, you know, with the checking the guys and the presentation of it, taking it outside, this, that, and the third. Quickly having growing crush on Camille. it's fully understandable, Magnus. You are a genius for that. just that moment, like, that was probably one of the best moments of the match when she, you know, freaking Skrull pulled an Eddie-esque move. Eddie's move, and got her immediately ejected. It was funny because Tommy Young was sitting at ringside. He saw the whole thing, and he looked like he tried to interject, but it didn't matter. Baby Hebner was like, nope, beat it. And then she came back. Then for Magnus to be like, no, I'm going to do this myself. And this is coming from a fan who had to witness one of the worst world title matches, world title runs in a company with Nick Aldis, who then was Magnus. So to see him be where he is now and to have this type of match with a clean finish.
Yeah.
Associate Magnus with a clean finish for me is huge, just by itself. But this was a really, this is just a great match. Like you said, this was a classic wrestling match. It wasn't too flashy or anything. The blade job was great. Total story, it wasn't blading for blading's sake.
No.
It worked. And just seeing him struggle to get that Kingsland on, and then him putting himself in perfect position to do that finger snap, and there's no better marker to tell you just how over Skrull is. No matter where he goes in the world, no matter what crowd it's in front of, they're gonna shut the hell up for that spot. They're gonna shut the hell up. There's gonna be somebody in the audience that's gonna stand up with the for that moment, and that's just perfect for me.
Yeah.
This was a great match. Came down to a great finish, and then obviously between two friends at the end of the day, so this was a great moment for them. But for me, obviously, it's been really cool to see this ascension with Magnus, and obviously the company is fully behind him, and he's fully behind the company with a proper world title run. Disappointing watching another Skrull loss coming off of that MSG show, but it's only a matter of time for him.
Yeah.
I hope, again, he's not another one of those guys where people get obsessed with the whole bridesmaid, never the bride of it all, because Skrull is one of the best going, and he's when people talk about the whole you deserve it all, he's definitely in that literal category of somebody that deserves it. So
best of Super Juniors next month, and he's in it.
Yep.
So we'll see where we go from there with your Nick Aldis and Marty Skrull. Nick Aldis moves on He has got an NWA title to defend, and there is no tougher belt in wrestling to defend than the NWA title, even these days, because he has to go everywhere and defend it in front of everybody, on little tiny crowds, on indie shows, and in front of big halls like this. This was just an excellent show. One thing we forgot to mention, of course, the Crockett Cup was presented by Nikita Koloff and Magnum TA, former Crockett Cup champions themselves, and Crockett Cup, and it was just so well done, this show. It was everything all WCW shows should have been.
Yeah.
And they mixed it up with WrestleCon. They've learned the lessons. What I like about it, they've learned the lessons that All In gave, which was mix and match talent from different companies, put a big media event with it so you get lots of people there, and get Fight TV to promote it for you, because they do a better job than anybody else. Both these shows available on Fight TV, by the way, if you want to go watch them. And speaking of streaming services you should go watch powerslam.tv. 1 month off when you use our promo code MULLETWATCH. And it's really, really good. We will get round to reviewing one of those shows. Just haven't had a chance yet. But overall, were you happy with the weekend's wrestling, Marcus?
Yeah, I thoroughly enjoyed both these shows. Obviously, it's the build that we've been with Impact so long, and just seeing that up and down roller coaster ride, it was just really cool to see them. Not a perfect show that they pulled off, but damn fine for, where they've been. Where they are and then where they're trying to get to. Like I said, I think that's their best big show since that homecoming show that's down and snuck up on everybody.
Yeah.
But it's going to be interesting seeing what they are going for. But they definitely finally got a good regime back there that you can have some confidence in going forward. And obviously, talent's never been an issue.
No, but we've both been looking for competency, which has been hard to find.
Yeah, two big C words, a competency and consistency. That's been huge. So, it looked like we got a solid dose of that with them. One particular blunder decision aside that we won't get into. And you come over to the NWA, and I think they did a great job. Like I said, I didn't come up with the NWA. I kind of had, as I got older, go back and watch all those classic Flair and Dusty of it all, and all those great classic legends from that time. So I didn't get to live with it like you and others have. But, they did a great job of really bringing back that vibe of it all without alienating fans who is just so used to the glamorized WWE of it all. This was your first time coming into it, they didn't feel like they were alienating you, and they didn't feel like they was waving their finger at you like, what you're used to sucks, and this is the only thing. Like, they really just brought everybody in. Obviously, you have Cornette on there explaining a great deal of a great commentary on the show as well. We're bringing in so many vibes, great vibes on this show, because the Magnum TA and the Nikita Koloff, that was just a great moment. And like I said, you had the Cornette like a kid in a candy store with the Rock and Roll Express, and you had one of my favorite guys, Caprice Coleman, there it is. One of my favorite guys, Caprice Coleman, like just that kid again, sitting in front of the TV watching NWA with Nikita Koloff and Magnum TA, a grin from ear to ear. And who was the other, the group that he introduced?
That would have been the Midnight Express. Beautiful Bobby, Sweet Stan, and Dennis Condrey, yes, the Midnight Express.
Yeah, God bless those guys, man. Everybody that was able to come back on this show and really soak it in, and shout out to the crowd for really giving them that welcome and it just that nostalgic feel, and for those guys to be able to come back to those stomping grounds and see where it's come to and see that their legacy that they left is being embraced and celebrated. This was a great overall feel show. I don't see how you could call yourself a real wrestling fan and not appreciate a show like this.
I've told this story before, but I will tell it again. This summed up what this night was about for me. When I first started watching WCW, or just at the tail end of when it was NWA Crockett Promotions and just got bought out by WCW, the first team I saw on television was the Midnight Express, and they were wrestling job guys. And every week they would wrestle them, and Cornette would come out. Every mother's nightmare and every schoolgirl's dream, beautiful Bobby and Sweet Stan, the Midnight Express. And that was the start of the match every week. And 3 weeks in a row, he goes, it's Brigham Grand Reach week. And then on the fourth week, he picks the microphone up, looks at him and goes, "Stick 'em, boys!" And they just go and beat the shit out of people. And it's like, this is what that was like, but over a full show. It was like going back to my childhood without being overbearing, like you said. And like just neat little details, like all of the broadcast staff were wearing like sports coats, like 80s, nicely designed, well-tailored, not awful looking, but actual 80s polyester style sports coats, the modern equivalent of that. And they looked good. They looked professional. There was a couple of production slips here and there, but it's a live wrestling event. There's always a couple. But yeah, it was just so good. And that old, the old purpley blue mat that the NWA used to have back in the 1980s. I've got so many videos at my dad's house of TV tapings from Concord and from Charlotte and from Greensboro with this horrible purple ring apron with NWA loosely plastered on the side, and it was just exactly what it needed to be. The old Ring of Honor logo, which I always liked as well. It was just really cool.
Yeah, you know, we talked about the, you know, fundamentals with Impact. This was just showing you the base fundamentals of wrestling that works in any era.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, you don't need to be old school versus new school. This is wrestling. This is, you know, what it naturally is. You know, this is the perfect example. If it ain't broke, don't fix it.
Yeah.
This works.
It works. You know, that's it. Like Novocaine. Right then. We're going to have to call it for today. I would like to thank my guest of Baton Rouge, Louisiana, Mr. Marcus Green. How are you doing, sir?
Yeah, thank you. Always a pleasure.
Always a pleasure to have you on. Nice to have you back. We missed you guys. We missed you, Marcus. It's only been a couple of weeks, but it feels like forever.
Oh, thank you.
I am James Troopany. You can find me on Twitter at Your Sheriff Lone Star. You can find the show Troopany Show on Twitter, The Troopany Show on Facebook, and The Troopany Show on Patreon, where you can keep us free forever for everyone. Next week, Pro Wrestling Don Taku is back. We have three nights to settle through. There's a lot of stuff that's happened there as well. We will get to Beginner's Guide. Young John from Steel Chair Magazine, he's their death correspondent, is going to do a beginner's guide with me sometime soon, so we've got some more beginner's guide. I know it's about 6 months since we did one. Bad news yesterday, I was really ill. As many of you know, I've been a town councillor for a long, long time. It was the election on Thursday, and I finished 10th out of 9 possible candidates by 10 votes. And I just kind of collapsed on Friday afternoon, just tired. And then Saturday, I was just ill all day. And we were supposed to record this podcast yesterday afternoon, me and Marcus and John. I was going to record it with him, and then I'd have a spare copy and one thing and another. So I'm going to get it with John sorted this week. I am recovered, but I'm no longer Councillor Troopany, which does make me kind of sad. But that's the way things go. That's the way the cookie crumbles. I wasn't far off. And good luck to my colleagues who go forward to the new Brigg Town Council. All of you who listen in Brigg, about three of you who live in Brigg and listen to this podcast. But yeah, take care, you guys. You've got a lot of work to do in the next 4 years. In the meantime, thank you very much for listening to the show today. Take care, and we'll see you next week. Pro Wrestling Don Taku. Bye.